Okay, today's daf from Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Zayin. So this is going to be a real Azus daf. Got to put our brazen desire to understand into it. And we're moving on in the story of Mumin. And as we saw from the beginning, all of these issues are not, as people like to look at them, are not anti-women issues. So whatever it is that we found was nogea, the relationship to a woman, is nogea relationship to a man as well. And whatever hakpadot were there in terms of a woman are there in terms of a man as well. So then the question is, what about when it comes to mumi? Because over here, I mean, it has nothing to do with man or woman. It has to do with, as we saw before, a different attitude towards marriage, number one. And that was Rish Lakish's Svar of Tavlame Taftandu and so on. And the other issue, which is very Nogia, is also the question of Nistach B'chasadecha. Remember, we have the idea that if an event occurs after someone else gets involved, then it's considered to be his problem. So let's say this man had been Ma'ares, the Isha, and only then the Mum came up, which is what we were discussing yesterday. So then it would be looked at, so to speak, as if it's his fault, because she was already in his rishus. However, as Tosis points out, that logic is nothing to do with the other way around, simply because we don't view the woman as having a soda when she has a husband. Whereas we find the opposite is true, that since the kinyan is made by the husband, we learn that actually from Kicha, Kicha Misteyev, right? So therefore, in the same way that if you bought something, you can't come back and taina to the owner that, you know, you sold me something lousy if something happens to it after you bought it. The same thing is true over here. The woman, so to speak, has given herself over to you, and therefore you can't taina that, you know, this is your fault, Miss Soda. You sold me something that's not so. It's your fault, because now that you've taken me under your wing, so to speak, anything that goes wrong is yours. But we don't say that in the opposite case, which, of course, leads to a completely different halacha in terms of the coming of Mumin subsequent to the marriage. So the Mishnah is going to begin discussing these questions, which revolve around both the level of tolerance and around the moment of the appearance. So we start off with the Mishnah right at the top over here on the third line, Ha'ish Shenaldu Bo Mumin. On the other hand, if you have a man, now look at that word Shenaldu. Now that may not be the correct word, as we're going to see in the Gemara, but Shenaldu seems to imply that these Mumin appeared later. In other words, you got married and then Mumin appeared. You developed these Mumin. In this case, we know that there's a different level of tolerance for appearances, that men have this crazy level of akpada on the appearance of a woman, as the entire shidduch world crisis knows. You know, I don't like the picture before you even meet the person. So that, but that isn't as serious at all the other way around. So therefore, if something, even though we had before that a mum is understood to be a problem for the marriage to a man, it's not considered to be normally a problem for a woman. On Reb Shimon Gamliel, now, but wait a minute. I mean, what are we talking about? That we wouldn't force him to divorce his wife. I understand, but Bamedvar Mamurim, that's on things that, in fact, are not serious issues and that women generally wouldn't be that makbid on. So Bamedvar Mamurim B'mumima Kitanim, talk about a small issue. Which Gemara, of course, we'll discuss. What are we talking about when we say a small mum, a big mum? Avubamumim gedolim, then kofino tolahotzi, we will, in fact, demand that he divorces her. And Tosva says that also means that even though we're forcing him to divorce her, she gets a ksuva. Question is, as we'll see, you know, what is going to prevent her from marrying a guy up front? But let's take a look at one. The correct lashon is in the Mishnah first, before we get to the question. Because the way we have it right now, Reb Yehuda says, the correct gears in the Mishnah is what we said. Noldu. Ha'isha noldu bo mumim. So in other words, when I, the woman, married him, There were no moomin. All of a sudden, he has these moomin, and I want a divorce. That's what it seems to be talking about. Whereas Chiya Bar Rav says, no, the Mishnah is talking about the fact that the moomin were there. They were there before they even got married. So in other words, we have two totally different approaches over here, as we'll see. Because if you say, noldu, and that even though before the marriage, there certainly were no problems, the woman can still say, you know, she can say that these problems developed afterwards, she still can't taina that she wants a divorce. Sakosha kenayu, certainly if the mumin were there before, again, this is another difference between the ish and the isha. A woman is tsanua, and therefore it's not going to be known that she has these mumin. Masha inken, when it comes to a male, there's no such thing as not knowing that someone has a mum, because there's not that level of self-protection about moomin and so on. And therefore, it would be known around town that he's got this moom. And we therefore can assume that if it was there all along, tekasava v'kibla, she knew about it. And since she went ahead with the marriage anyway, she would have to then accept what it was that she knew about. She can't taina that it's mekach toz, can she? So therefore, if even noldu, it would mean for sure if it was there before. But what about according to the approach that the correct girsa is, as Chiya Bar Rav said, that hayubo, they were there before. Then you can say, okay, if they were there before, safra v'kibla, but if all of a sudden they appeared, so then lechora he would say that the Mishnah implies that she could say, my God, I never intended to marry a guy with this problem. Now, the question is how we would understand the Mishnah if we are going according to Chiya Bar Rav in the Girsa. Because take a look at the end of the Mishnah. What in the world is that? I mean, I understand, according to Rav Yehuda, that the case is that these women suddenly appeared unexpectedly in the course of their marriage. So then you can say that there's a difference between things that we really believe are grounds for divorce, and she cannot be expected, Baruch Avram. She cannot be expected. You do know about this idea in the Gemara that once you put your hand up to your face, it's the end, right? So in this case, if there's a difference on the type of moment, it makes a great deal of sense. A small issue, she can't come along at time. I can't live with that, but a big issue, she can. But if you're so Heinrich Shiny Ben Gedolim Miktanim, that would explain why we have the difference in the Mishnah between a major mum and a smaller mum. But according to the Mandi Omar, Hayu, so Chiya Bar Rav says it's talking about that the mumim were there from before, and the basis in the Mishnah is that it's expected that she knew about these mumim, Hayu. So Mali Gedolim, Mali Ketanim. What's the difference? I thought the whole point was she knew about it. As a matter of fact, the more impactful the mum is, the more likely it is that she knew about it, right? So if the guy's got a third arm sticking out of his chest, you know, so when he jumped into the local swimming hole, every kid in town knew about it, you know? I mean, he's always ahead of the other kid because he's got that other arm. Shane came, a woman who's wearing her bathing suit, and I don't know, people don't know what's going on. So therefore, it makes no sense. Mali gedolim, mali ketanim. I mean, bottom line is either way, asavra v'kibla. I thought the whole point was that since we assume she knows about it, so because of that, she can't taina afterwards that she wants a divorce. We say, listen, you know, this is something you accepted. Says the Gemara, no, not necessarily, because there might be mumim of a kind that she thinks that she can live with. We saw this for her before. She thinks she can live with this mum, and then it turns out that she says, look, I did my best, I tried, but, you know, it's driving me crazy. I can't live in this situation. So kisfuragi, so this is what Chiya Bar Rav would say, the Mishnah is telling us, that she can taina kisfuragi, she yichola lekabel, but she says, achshav, ini yichola lekabel. I see that it is not something I can live with at all. And therefore, we will force him to give a get. Now, the question is, according to what Tosfos says, namely, that when we say we force him to give a get, it means to give a get and to pay the ksuva. And this was, Tosfos brings this actually from a brisa. So then, as Tosfos himself brings up, what is to prevent a nasty woman from pretending that she has such a big heart, you know, that she loves this guy, even though he's a cripple, and she's going to marry him, and she's going to be make the difference to his life. And classic stories, you know, the nursing stories during the war and so on. Classic story. And of course, what she has in mind is that then she's going to come around and she's going to say, well, I thought I could manage, but I can't. So now I want a big divorce settlement, right? I mean, this is awful. It's a terrible thing to think. But, you know, I mean, how can we put people into this kind of situation that we can accept the taina of kisvurahi shechola lekabel, but she really can't? You know, which is a good point. So Tosfos has a very interesting answer, which boils down to, there's a big difference between a judicial approach in which a certain taina brings a certain result. So that we have like a standard. If a woman comes along and says, "Kisvura yiti lekabel ve'in yechola," so that ipso facto is ground for divorce and ksuv, right? And that's how many of these halachas are paskin. You know, look, we don't have to go into it. You don't have to get a psychologist. You don't have, I mean, it's the bottom line that we have that type of halach. So Tosfos suggests that this din of kisvura yiti lekabel is not that type of judicial standard. And by the way, Chazal were koveya, as we're going to see when we get to Nezikin, Chazal were koveya certain standards to avoid the complications and backup in the court systems where people could get an interminable battles over what damage did you cause my brand name and so on and so forth, right? These are the kind of things that can hold up a court for years. And they would convey certain standards. If you do X, you slap someone across the face, you know, with the front of your hand, you pay Y. And if you do Z, then you pay A, and so on and so forth. And that's very efficient. But Tosfos says maybe the point over here is that this halacha is meant to be only a factor in the court's decision. And therefore, it means it's not automatic. And if there's any indication that the court has that indeed this was something that was a nasty trick from the beginning, so they have to do some research on it. You know, like, do people really know her as someone that, you know, cared about the guy and so on and so forth? And that ain't a chinami. If there's any indication to the court that there was some kind of hanky-panky involved, then they won't award her the ksuva. The very fact that it's up to the court means you've undermined any basis for a woman doing this, because then she just get into this, you're not getting anything out of it. So that's going to kill it right there on the spot. So it's actually much more fundamental kind of answer than just what appears on the surface. Well, if they see any hanky-panky, that isn't the point. It's that per se will end the hanky-panky almost entirely. Anyway, now, So the Agos Habach says this is meant to be introduced with Tanya. It's really a brisa, the first part of this. So Tanya, Elohim mumim gedolim. So what are considered to be the big mumim? Pirish Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Let's say the guy is, his eye goes blind. Not both of his eyes, but one eye goes blind. A hand gets cut off. His foot is destroyed, meaning nishbra in the sense that it can't be fixed, and he's not going to be able to walk normally. Basically, most of the Rishonim hold that if he literally is dysfunctional, so he loses both eyes, he loses both legs, and he can't get around at all, and so on, that then for sure everybody's made it that she could tie it afterwards, that it's impossible to live like this. Anyway, getting now Itmar. Now, this piece is the Pirish. So what the Bach says is up to Itmar, it's really a Breita. And now we have the Gemara. So Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov Amar Rabbi Yochanan, that's how we paskin. Halacha Grib Shimon Memoliam. Whereas Ravas said, that's not what Rav Nachman said. Rav Nachman said that actually the halacha is Kedivrei Chachamim. Now it turns out we have a Machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Nachman. Can you, even for a big mum, can a woman actually demand her get? Now, the question is, there's something fishy about saying that Rabbi Yochanan paskened like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. What's fishy isn't that he holds like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. What's fishy is that he said the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, because why in the world would Rabbi Yochanan ever say the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel if Rabbi Yochanan's approach across Shas is the halacha is always like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, except in three particular cases which are well known? And then, so how could he be the one who says the halacha here is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? That's the problem. For Amar Rabba Bar Bachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, B'chomakom, Shishana Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, B'mishnatenu, here's what Rabbi Yochanan said. Wherever we have Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel appear in any Mishnah, the halacha is always like that, except for famous cases, through three famous cases. One of them, we've had this so many times, one of them has to do with an arev. So the question is, when somebody's mechayev himself for someone else's loan, at what point you can go to him instead of to the person who took the loan? And the other one was the Tzaidan, which is the name of a place. Maybe it means Sidon, I don't know. But anyway, it's always written Tzaidan. So that was referring to a case of a get in that city, which was machlokas. And the machlokas that has various cases of ra'ayot, where somebody, the court gave a person a certain amount of time. You know, here you have a week to bring all of your proofs. Do you have any other proofs? And the guy says, no. Or they said, do you have any other witnesses? And he says, no. And then he discovers witnesses. And the question is whether he could still bring additional evidence. And well, what's the guy supposed to do if he didn't know yet? Anyway, so over there, there's a number of machlokas, depending how you read the Mishnah, two or three machlokas. And the last one is not like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. But don't say the other only case. So how could you say that Rabbi Yochanan would paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel specifically in this case? Even Baruch Avram would want to know how you could explain that away. And what we'll have to say is Amoroi Ninu Aliba de Rabbi Yochanan. In other words, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, you're right. He would never have said halachic Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, because it's always like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. But Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov did not have that klal in Rabbi Yochanan. And therefore, he said that in this case, we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. We are now ready for our Kapitan. Listen, I'm ready to trade you. I mean, you really liked this yesterday, you know, but I was expecting some of that Talisker in exchange here.
Beam it up, Rabbi. Zuk the Helik Mishnah.
Ve'elo Shekofino Tolahotzi. Now, there are particular cases of mumim where we will force a person to give a get. So in other words, even let's say the Tanakhama says that we just had, I mean, it's from all one Mishnah really, but the Tanakhama said that even mumim gedolim doesn't have to be megarish ishtei, but these are things that definitely would. So this would be a mukashrin. So remember, Muka Shchin is, I mean, the word Shchin is generally taken to mean specifically has like, you know, like Shchin Mitzrayim kind of things. But the truth is that Muka Shchin refers to breakdown in the skin, different types of breakdowns in the skin. One of Muka Shchin is a type of situation which is similar to what we call leprosy, not the tzaras in the Torah. But what we call leprosy actually causes the kind of things that we find occurring in a mukashrin, in which gangrene will cause him to lose parts of his body. And that is the problem, because any type of impact on the skin is awful. So it's just a horrible situation. Someone who has a polypus, which the Gemara will explain what a polypus is. And then we have a mikametz, a mitzaref nechoshet, a burski. Now, these are all not problems in his body, but problems in his job. So if a guy, and remember, a job in those days, not a job, it's a career, because you become, so to speak, an expert at that particular thing. So the mikametz is interesting because what it means is someone who's always going around picking up dog droppings. Now, the thing is that we know, and we're going to see in the Gemara over here also, that mikametz, there is a getter of a mikametz that is different than a bursi. A bursi means a guy who works with skins. And part of working with skins actually is mixing the skins with things like dog droppings. And that's because of the impact that the chemicals will have on the skin. But generally speaking, the bursi, I mean, there are all kinds of awful stenches of decomposing organic matter on skins until they're completely dried out. And so because of that, the bursi and the mekametz being separate would imply that the mekametz is not being mekametz for the purposes of working on a skin. So Rashi says, I don't know what this guy is going around collecting dog droppings for, but I must say that in a visit to Germany, I noticed that people would use dog droppings as a detergent, and therefore they would soak clothing in order to get rid of, obviously they would then wash it out with a rinse, but they would use these chemicals as the same way we use ammonia with urine that's been sitting around. And that was very common in the Gemara time, right? And it's very common still in many places. So he says maybe that's what it's talking about. But then we'll see in the Gemara that we're going to make the difference between a mekametz, a bursi gadol, and a bursi katan. So I mean, Tosis actually asks, why don't we just say that straight out? Anyway.
I prefer Rebbe's vinegar remedy. Vinegar with a cloth.
Vinegar remedy, right. It's not going to help in a marriage. Remember, by the way, that these professions we had in Chagiga, and that is that they are not Eila L'Regel, because they can't be Eila Im Kol Yisrael, because people can't stand being near them. You know, I mentioned that that's a bit of a problem in Ethiopian Airlines. You know, the question is, can you travel Ethiopian Airlines? Anybody who's tried knows exactly what problem we're talking about. But anyway, so I've described a flight to you in which 10 seats in all directions from someone who are empty, no matter how crowded the rest of the plane was. Anyway, so over here, the smell is so awful that for sure she can tie it, that she couldn't stand it. Bain Shah you actually nisu, whether they were there before, who bain misha nisu noldu, or he became this thing, or he got this polypus afterwards. Yalkula, I'm a Rebbe Meir. So all of these really big problems, Rebbe Meir says, forget about the question of whether it was there. How about if he actually wrote out a contract with her that she knows about this problem and she wants to marry him anyway? It wouldn't matter. Afopishit na'ima, she can still say, Svura yitish ani yichola lekabel, va'akshav eni yichola lekabel. It's just too much to live with. So therefore, Rebbe Meir says, it certainly would be considered to be an understandable error, and she will therefore be able to force her husband. Masha'enke nechachomim say, look, if she signed up on it, mikabelati al korcha. If she didn't sign up, okay, then she can say, even though I knew about it, but if she said, even though you have this, I will remain with you. So then, according to many of the Rishonim, it's saying, no, she can't even do that. Fine. All right. I don't want to go into the details. Lomaiser is a machlokus. When I say lomaiser, I mean literally machlokus bismanazen in terms of how we paskin. Whether we're talking about even if she knew about it before or Dafka, where she actually said she didn't know about it before. Okay, but because these are really day-to-day occurrences, so to speak, in court. So this is no gay halacha lemaisa now. And again, it's a difference between the Sfarad and the Ashkenazi. Anyway, continuing on. Chutz min mukashchina, there's one thing where everybody agrees that she does not remain with him. And that's simply because if a mukashchin is actually a disease of the skin and is dangerous to him, then it is certainly dangerous to a certain part of his body if he's going to be rubbing it in a way that could end up damaging him, right? So because of that, we force them to get divorced because if she has any intercourse with him, I mean, God only knows what's going to happen to the poor guy. And because of that, there we will actually force it for his own protection. We will force a divorce. And there was a ma'aseh at Sidon, b'bursi achad shemet. There's also another question over here. If she was actually married to a guy that had one of these awful jobs and he smelled the whole life and he died, and he had a brother who was in the same business, and even they were business together, and now he is the Yavam, he died without children. And the Chachamim said that the woman was allowed to refuse Yibam on the basis of, look, the fact that I was able to live with your brother does not mean I can live with you under the same circumstances, because your brother had some good things that I like and I don't like you. And therefore, once you don't have that special affinity for a person, then for sure she can tell you, I can't live with this. Could you live with it? And because of that, we will not force Yibam on her. This, of course, was before the time in which we always said you can't do Yibam. Okay, so now getting into the cases. What exactly is a Baal Polypus? What is a polypus? Omre v'yadam ha-shmuel, it's re'ach ha-chota. It means that there's some type of growth in his nose so that when he breathes, there's always a smell of rotting infection. B'matnita tana, it means there's a smell when he talks. And actually, Rav Asi said just the opposite, that Shmuel was the one who said that it means the mouth. And Brisa says it means the nose. And Rav Asi said, if you want to remember who said what. So there's a very cute shot over here. Rashi's got his pasha. The way to remember it is, Shmuel Apasik Pume Mikulei Pirkim. And Shmuel always used to review this parak. Now, the problem with that is that Shmuel would probably review every parak. So, like, it's sort of funny to say this parak. So there's a beautiful shot in the Shita that says, if you take a look, every single Mishnah in this parak has got some comment by Shmuel. Can't keep his mouth shut in this parak. So that's the shot. He didn't shut his mouth throughout this entire parak. I got Shmuel ringing in my head. So now that means the mouth was Shmuel. Okay, very cute. So, all right. So Shmuel never shut his mouth all through this parak. Okay, then we had the case of the mikametz. What exactly is a mikametz? A mikametz. So at klavim, meisve. Mikametz, there's a brisa that says that mikametz is a bursi. Because as we saw, part of the tanning of skins, they would use the actual dog droppings. Especially in particular cases, there are some types of leather that need more of that, and so on. So v'latimer, I understand. You need to bring a brisa to make problems for yourself. What do you have to ask on me from mekamed zeburz? You should have said that if he's a mekamed, so that's klovim. So how do you explain the Mishnah, right? It's not me. The Mishnah says there's two separate issues. Mekamed, mitzarif lechoshes, and burzi. So obviously it's not a burzi. So how can you say mekamed zeburzi? You're looking at me like I got a problem. The Bryce has got a problem. No. There's no contradiction in the Mishnah because Bishlam Amas Nisin is not a problem. Because we could say that the Mishnah is dealing with two levels. You know, so you have a Bursi Gedola, you have a guy who's got this major factory and he's wherever he goes in the factory, it smells to high heaven, you know. And over there, I can understand the Hakpot. And over here, when it's talking about somebody who's Mikabates, he's saying, okay, so he's got like in his garage. He does like private tanning, you know, to make a buck on the side. He's a poor man. So that's that I could say. But according to Rav Yehuda didn't say that it refers to a borsi in any sense. He just says that it means somebody who collects star droppings wherever he goes. And that, like Rashi says, I don't know what the point of that would be, unless it's for detergent, maybe. So is there any kind of a basis for Rav Yehuda? Like, Rav Yehuda can't argue on a braita. No, he knows it's a machlokes tanoim. Because the Tanya mikametz zebursi, the yesh omrim zeh mikametz soat klavim. So he, Rav Yehuda, was going according to the Yesh Omrim. And apparently there were these other uses which Rashi suggests. He knows of one, but, you know, he can't say for sure that's what it's referring to. But definitely anything that gives us those type of sharp chemicals might be usable for a lot of different things that we don't know. And then the next thing we had was a mitzaref nechosha. What exactly is a mitzaref nechosha? Rav Ashi says mitzaref means that he is chashli duty. What he does is he bangs out nechoshas. So in other words, he makes it very thin, and that way he gets these thin pieces of metal that he can then form into anything. You turn them into pipes, or you can turn them into Shabbos dudim, you know, into a big kettle. So that's what he does. And as anybody who has handled nechoshet personally knows, it really starts smelling bad when you've got your hands all over this stuff. Rabbi Barbachana says, no, it means a miner. He's mechatek nechoshet mikaro, and he deals with ores that have nechoshet in it, and that smells. And in fact, that's what a braita says. Tanya gavosi de Rabbi Barbachana ezel mitzarev zam mechatek nechoshet mikaro. There's other cases, says the Gemara, because Rav said, if somebody said, any zan, any mifarnes, I don't want to give clothes and food to my wife, yotzi v'yitein ketuva. So, I mean, if you're going to tell me cases where we will force a man to give a ketuva, here's another case like that. Ozo Rabbi Elazar, and he said to Shmuel what Rav had said. And so Shmuel, when he heard Rabbi Elazar repeating this, he said, okay, guys, let's bring out the animal feed, get some barley over here. Elazar apparently has decided he's a horse. I mean, he certainly isn't speaking very intelligently. You got some horse feed? So, Achsur Sari Lelos. This is an absurd, ridiculous kind of sock. How could anybody say something so stupid? We will force a guy to divorce his wife because he says, I don't want to provide her with clothes or food. What are you going to force him to divorce her for? Force him to pay for the food and for the clothing. If you're already going to be forcing him, why destroy their marriage? So, I mean, that's a point. So what would Rav say? Shmuel certainly didn't think Rav was going to be fed animal feed, did he? And Rav would say, that's not the point. I, Taina, for a woman to live with a guy who says, I don't want to give her any clothes and I don't want to give her any foods. Okay, so she went to court and the court said he has to give her. A week later, as everybody knows, again, he's not giving child support. So now what? Back to court. So it's like every week, back to court. I'm going to live with this guy in one cage. Me and him, get out of here. So that's the reason that we're forcing divorce. It has nothing to do with making sure that she gets support. It has to do with the fact that I cannot live with this kind of person. Ein adam darim nachash b'kfifa. You can't put a snake and yourself in one basket and think everything is going to be fine. There'll be one moment when you turn your attention away, and that's when the snake is going to get you. This was, of course, the life of Pi, if you think the tigers are quite as bad. Kisolik Rabbi Zeira. So now Rabbi Zeira, he came from Bavel, and he finds Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yefet, who was saying over what Rav had paskin, Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. In other words, this thing that Rav had said that we just learned that we're going to force a divorce because the guy's like living with a nachash. So he said that same thing over, and he said it in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, not in the name of Rav. Omar Leis, Rabbi Zira, said to Rabbi Yom Bar Yefes, you better watch out, honey. Because everybody brought out the barley for poor Elazar and Bavel when he brought this over. He said in the name of Rav. So don't think just because you're quoting it in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, you're not going to get covered over with sacks of animal feed. They're going to think you're as stupid as they thought that poor Rabbi Yomar Bar Yefes was. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Ravasi, another issue is the general rule that we're going to force a guy to divorce his wife we will only do if there's actual iser in the woman, so she's a mamzeret, whatever, over there, we will force a guy to divorce his wife. Now, so Rav Yehuda says, of course, I said this over to Shmuel, that this is what Rav Asi said, and he actually expanded on it, and he said, what we're talking about is isurim, like Amar Lekohen Gadol, Gush B'Chalutz Lekohen Ed Yet, Mamzeret and Netina, Yisrael, Bat Yisrael, Mamzeret and Netina, that type of thing is what we're talking about. In other words, there's an actual pagam in the heter to marry a woman like this. But what about a case? Somebody marries a woman. He has spent 10 years with her. They haven't been zocher to children. And generally, the halacha is over there that he's mechuyev to be mekayim piri of a rivyon. And you would think, okay, as long as he's going to remain married to this woman, he's not going to get another wife. I mean, who's going to want to marry a guy that's been married for 10 years to somebody else? And he's not divorcing her. Nonetheless, that type of thing, and that's exactly, Shmuel says, that's the point, that when we're talking about there's a pagam, we mean there's a real pagam in the woman that is mechayev of a divorce. But the fact that he was married for 10 years is not a chiyev to divorce, because he could theoretically, as far as the Torah is concerned, he could just take another wife, you know? So what are you going to say? Well, no, he's not going to be able to take another wife. That's a Rabbanon, you know, that's an assessment, right? A forced guy to divorce someone on that basis. Whereas Rav Tachlifa Bar Avimi said, no, actually Shmuel Paskin, that even where someone was Nasra Isha, Vashayim Ha'ezer Shanim V'lo Yalda, we can still force him to divorce in order for him to be Mekayim Piri of Arimya. Now, the question is, if that's true, how come it's not in the Mishnah? It's not in Elu Shekofino Tolotzi. And we spoke about the Mukashrin and about Polypus and so on, right? But we didn't say a word about Mishaloki and Piri of Arivya. So, I mean, Bishamur of Asi, I understand why we don't talk about the cases that he was talking about, you know, Amon of the Kohen Gadol, Grusha V'Chalutz of Kohen Ed Yet, and so on and so forth. Because, I mean, that's obviously, we're not talking about over here, he's suing the Yeraisa. He's talking about places where the Rabbanan said that these are areas where, for whatever, for questions of sensitivity and what we expect a woman to live with, or in Darim B'Kvifa Achas. Yes, that's not, that I need a Mishnah to teach me. I don't need a Mishnah to teach me that a Besdin makes sure that people keep an Isser D'Oraisa, for heaven's sake. So that's not mentioned. D'Oraisa Lo Katani. But if you hold of Rav Tachlifa Bar Avimi, then this Chiyav, that you're mechuyev to get rid of a woman that you've been married to for 10 years without children, that is certainly not a D'Oraisa. Because, I mean, a D'Oraisa, you can marry another woman. So the fact that the Rabbanan say, yeah, but the bottom line is, practically speaking, he's never going to end up being Mekayim Piri of Arivia. Okay, that's another D'Rabbanan. So why, in fact, don't we mention this D'Rabbanan divorce together with all the other things that are D'Rabbanan divorces, right? That will force a get. Reb Nachman, no. When we said that we will force him, well, you think he meant that Rav Tachlifa Bar Avimi meant that we're going to tie him up to the Amud and we'll start beating him up until he gets rid of his wife? It means that we'll put him under pressure, like we spoke about before, social pressure, you know, that kind of thing. But we're not gonna really hit him. So Habamili, that we're going to only use verbal pressure. Bahabashoti, but the cases in the Mishnah where a guy who has these mumin or so on, or he doesn't want to divorce his wife, we will force him to divorce his wife, even if we have to beat him into it. Matki b'lo Rabbi Abba, I never heard of people being forced by words, okay? As it says in the Pasuk in Mishle, Bidvarim lo yivaser avet, a person who's basically an evet to his own needs, he's never going to be put into his place by talking to him. You're going to have to beat him up. That's the point. So how could it mean that we're going to force him to be in the Kayim period of Arivia by talking to him? That doesn't make any sense. Hello, Amr Baba. Of course, it means we will force him. That is to say, we'll beat him up. But the difference is that in the cases in the Mishnah, if the woman says, I'm ready to stick with him, anyway, so we allow her to stick with him. But this case is different, and it doesn't fit the cases in the Mishnah, because the case that we're talking about over here is, even if she says, I'm fine not having any children with him, and of course, we have no idea who's at fault over here for not having children, so then even though she says, I'm happy with him, lo shafkina, we won't let her if nobody else wants to marry, and logistically, and that means that we can't include it in the normal cases. Excuse me, says the Gemara. How about the case of the Mukashrin? We're over there. Didn't we say that even if she would say, I want to stick with him, we will not allow her to stick with him? Because it says in the Mishnah, the only case where we will absolutely force her, even if she had agreed and in advance and it's signed that she is sticking with him, any case besides the Mukashrin, that's okay. But the Mukashrin, we will force divorce for his own protection. I mean, she's going to destroy him if she has any kind of intercourse with him. And yet that's included in the Mishnah. So if that's included in the Mishnah, why doesn't include the case of the period of Arabia issue where there's been 10 years without any children? No, says Gemara, it's still different. Because let's say the Mukashrin, if she says, listen, I will protect him, okay? And I will live with him, but only if we have people that are witnesses in the house at all time to make sure that we don't have any intimate relations. That offers sufficient protection for him that he's not going to be hurt. But as far as the period of Arivia is concerned, that's really great. The other woman is for sure, oh, she's not going to sleep with him because we got lots of people in there and security cameras. Oh, for sure, I'll go live with him. Yeah, right. So that's going to totally destroy his chances of getting another wife. And over there, even if she says, I'm going to live with him with witnesses, Lo Shafkin Alai, because she's still not going to be able to get him children. Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yossi, Sachli Zaken Echad Mianshe Yerushalayim. There was someone from the Dora Yashan in Yerushalayim who told me there's 24 different types of Mukashrin. It's not one particular illness. And Kulan Omer Chachamim Tashmish Kashalayim. The truth is, every last kind has problems in having any type of sexual relations that is going to damage him and his skin. But the worst one is the Baalei Ra'atan. I mean, he can be really very quickly damaged. And what is the Baalei Ra'atan? You see, the Baalei Ra'atan is not that we know what this is in modern terms, but it's a parasite that lives on the cranial membrane. And that causes all types of problems. And where does that come from? The Tanya. Right? It says somebody who let blood. He keys dam. And then he has intercourse immediately after Akaza's dam. Havile banim vaitikin. So then his children, if he impregnates her, the children will be weaklings. But if both of them had hakazat adam, and then they have intercourse together, then those children can be affected with ra'atan. Om Rav Papa, this is only if after donating blood, they didn't give them some orange juice. I mean, for heaven's sakes, even the Magen David Adom gives you something to drink after you give blood. So that's only if they didn't have anything. It's not going to cause any problems if after giving blood, there's some type of nourishment. Anyway, what shows you, what are the symptoms of Ra'atan? Well, Dolphan Ine, his eyes are constantly tearing. Daive Nechire, he's always got a nose running. Aitile Rire Bipume, and he's actually dribbling from his mouth all the time. Veromu Didvi Iluya, and flies are always following him around. You remember old Dick Tracy and Fly Face? That guy in Dick Tracy, he had Ra'atan. They just were nice about it, just called him Fly Face. But so that would be a simon to Ra'atan. And what do you do about curing him? So you have to remove this parasite. So how do you remove this parasite? you can't get to his cranial membrane, can you? Rabbaye, yeah, you can actually. You take pila veludana. Okay, so these are various types of plants that they give names for. I have no idea, you know, what they really are. And girda de goza, bark off of a nut, meaning a nut tree. And girda de ashpa, and then shaving the skins that you were working on. And kalil malka, a kind of flower. Betachla de dikla sumka, then you have those little growths on small red dates that aren't yet ready for picking. You put all of these things in a pot and you boil them together. Then you take this guy, the Rahasan guy, into a place where there's no air that can penetrate the house at all. It's completely sealed. It's made out of marble. If you don't have available a sealed chamber, which in those days was made out of marble, so then Iloika Beta Tashisha, you can make the equivalent by having very thick walls that are 7.5 bricks thick, each brick being 3 tefachim. So Mayale, Lebeta Deshev Livne Ve'aricha, 7 bricks plus 1. A riach, which is a half a brick, and you pour 300 cups. Again, remember, 300 is always an exaggerated amount, but pour 300 cups of your medication on his head, and that softens his skull. So adarafi arita de mukhe. Then you can open the skull without damaging anything, and you will find these parasites on the cranial membrane. What you need to do is make sure that the parasite is removable. So you bring 4 leaves from Hadassim. You put one under each one of the legs of this parasite, because otherwise it will try to hold on and tear the cranial membrane when you pull it out. Mishokel bitzvata, you take tongs to remove it, and you have to burn it right away. The ilo, if you don't get rid of it, it manages to jump back onto the patient. Machris, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan said, this parasite is extremely communicable, and it has its, whatever, it's got eggs or whatever, they can be transferred even by flies that was lying on this guy's body. So do not get anywhere near even flies that were around the Baalei Ra'atan. Rabbi Zera says, forget about flies. Don't even live anywhere close to where there's air that was moving. It can also communicate this disease in the air. And therefore, do not stand. Rabbi Zera was very careful not to stand in an air flow which passed over a Baal Ra'atan. Rabbi Elazar wouldn't walk into a house that had a Baalei Ra'atan. Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi wouldn't eat even eggs that were hatched in a place in anywhere in the Mavrit where there was a Baal Ra'atan. So they were extremely careful because it's extremely contagious. Whereas Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, he used to be friends with the Baalei Ra'atan, and he would put his arms around them, and Michrach Bu, and he would say, come friend, let me learn with you, we'll learn some Gemara together, and they would do the Daf Yomi, the Osik Petera, and Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi said, how can you be worried about catching Ra'atan if you have Torah? It says, Ayelet Ahavim, the Yalat Chain, that the Torah is basically a beloved Ayalah and is full of the most incredible Chain that falls all over you. You're worried about a ridiculous, ugly parasite. What, are you crazy? It couldn't affect me for nothing. It's a Kal V'chomer. If it can even make an individual be a Baal Chain, you don't think a good Migna, you don't think it's going to protect you from getting sick? Of course. I mean, this is a disgusting illness. Anyway, when it was time for the end of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, so in the Shamayim, the Beis Din told the Malach HaMavos, you can't just take this guy's soul. You got to do whatever he asks. So, you know, give him a dying request. So the Malach HaMavos comes to him and says, okay, so what can I do for you? So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, I want to see where I'm going to be in Gan Eden. So Achrili Duchtai. So the Malach HaMavos says, okay, yeah, why not? L'chaye, happy to show you your place. I mean, he figured that Rabbi Shimon Levi wanted to be secure, you know, when he was dying, that he's going to a better place, you know. So Rabbi Shimon Levi tells the Malach HaMavis, I ain't going with you when you're carrying around that big knife, man. You scare the hell out of me. Give me the knife, I'll hold it, and then we'll walk together to Gan Eden. So Havli Sakincha, Dilma Mevaatatli Beurcha, you might scare me. Okay, so he gave him the knife. Yavan Yalek. Anyway, they get to Gan Eden, and Rabbi Shimon Levi says, I can't see anything. I mean, this place is surrounded by a mechitza. Give me a leg up. So Malcolm gives Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi a leg up so he can peek over the mechitza into Gan Eden. He says, it's right over here. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who pretended he could barely move, suddenly gives a jump and jumps straight into Gan Eden. So he was Shavar and Nafal Ugisi. He fell to the other side in Gan Eden. But the Malach HaMavis was holding on to his jacket. I'm not letting you go. You come back here, you bum, you phony. Get back here. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, I swear I'm never coming back. You can stay here forever. You're not going to get me back there. Anyway, so now there's a problem. Because, I mean, Ein Machilin La'adam, something that he said was us, and he already made a shvuah that he's not going back. So how can the Malach HaMavis insist that he come back? So they went to ask a shaila by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what do we do? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'll tell you what. If Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had ever made a shvuah in his lifetime that he had charata from and he got a heter in Beis Din, then he's going to have to go back. But if a shvuah to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is a definition of reality, we can't push him back. So it turned out he had never done anything like that. So he had to remain there, right? And the Malach HaMavis had to let go of his begat. So the Malach HaMavis says, okay, but at least give me back my knife. How am I supposed to go around? What about all those nice pictures of me holding that big, you know, search? I mean, what's going on? I need that. It's part of my outfit. No, I'm not giving this to you. I think that we should stop this absurd mishigas if you're going around collecting people's souls. What is this? Some kind of weird Christian idea. So I refuse. I'm not giving it back to you. So anyway, a buzz call came out. And said, no. We still need this whole mortality act. So give it back to him. Other people need it, you know. Mitvah lebriyat. So anyway, so there Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. One second, please. There Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, when he comes to Gan Eden, please, Eliyahu HaNavi comes and says, Panu malkam la barley boy. Okay, everybody, move out of the way. We've got an unexpected permanent guest over here. Move aside, please. Barley boy is coming. So anyway, where do you think he was jumped into? Where he was shown was right next to Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, you know? And so he goes, he sees Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai is sitting on top of 13 chairs that are made out of this very expensive gold. All right, so he's like way up there, you know? So Omar Leis, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said to him, you're the famous guy that makes such big fuss about? You're Mr. Bar Levi. He said, that's me. You don't look very impressive to me. Let me ask you something. Nirata Keshet Biamecha, were there rainbows when you were alive? Because, I mean, in my life, there were never any rainbows because I was good enough to save the whole world from destruction. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't need a rainbow. All he needed was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So how about you? Were there rainbows in your life? So he said, yeah, rainbows all over. Then you're worthless. You can't be the barley boy. Now, the truth is, there were no rainbows in his life. But he figured, I'm not going to tell him that. What? I'm going to be ma'aksik dave to myself that I'm as good as the rainbow. So he refused to do this. Now, I'm sure what Barnea wants to tell us about is, of course, a very sad experience that I had, which was that I was once on vacation in Barnea's neighborhood. So I rented a place for Hanukkah. And the guy had a swimming pool in the back of his rental. Okay, so he had like lighting in the middle of the night. So I go to the swimming pool. Yeah, they're in the middle of the night in the swimming pool, you know, not exactly tsanua. in the morning, I see that there's a Mara next to the swimming pool. And on the Mara, it has in the original gate of the Mara, you know, so whatever, centuries old, it says Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And I'm sitting there. That means that this guy had Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi buried in his backyard. It was absolutely horrifying. And apparently he hadn't told the authorities about it because he didn't want to lose, you know, because then they take over. He didn't want to lose his backyard. And I don't know what in the end, Barnea, you know what I'm talking about. What's his name?
It's now marked, Mitch Pilser. It's now marked. I'm here with other guys in the car. We all know it. It's now marked and it's Makom Mechubad and people come. Yes. Yes. And it's not just a swimming pool. It's a natural spring that feeds. It's like, you know, you think, wow.
Okay, I understand. So what did they do? They took it away from him or it's the
no,
same?
No, no, no. You see the stone and it's marked and people can come visit. Uh-huh. No, it's marked in the Chubad and closed, but they didn't take away the whole area from it.
You can't get through to Hoshaya there.
You can't get through to Hoshaya there anymore, but you can come to Mitch and say,
Wait, why can't you get through to Hoshaya?
They close the road.
On your bicycle
you can, but not through the car. That's what Kobe Abelman is saying.
You can't even get the key anymore to that gate?
No. That's what Kobe is saying. It's an update from the field. But I was just trying to get Rebbe to drink and say, we're also human, and in this world, we still need to drink. That was what I was trying to say.
I thought you were going to tell us about your neighborhood. Anyway, this is a new challenge to Gavi. Making your way from Hoshaya all the way.
I've managed to do it before in my car.
You did do it with your car?
With a lot of Siyata Dishmaya when it came to opening the gates.
It's such a wonderful route. Yeah. All right. Wonderful. All right. So then there was another Meister like this where Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa wasn't on the Madrig of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, but he was a very close friend of the Malach HaMaves. And they used to go out for coffee together and everything. And because of that, when it was time for the Malach HaMaves to collect Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa's soul, so they said to the Malach HaMaves, listen, you have to be nice to this guy. I mean, come on, you're best of friends. So they told him the same thing. Okay, so he goes to Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, and he appears to him in the whole outfit, you know. So Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa got the idea that, uh-oh. So he says to the Malach HaMaves, listen, I go away for 30 days. I need time to go over all of my learning. Because there's a maimer that says, Ashrei Misha Balakan V'Talmuda B'Yada. You have to be shaleit on all of your learning. Okay, so the Malach HaMaves went away. And he said, okay, L'chaye, excellent. Funny thing for Malach HaMaves to say, L'chaye, right? But he says, L'chaye. And then when he comes back, so Rabbi Chanina, so he says to him, I want to see where I'm going to Gan Eden.
Rebbe, one line up. Shafkele.
What? Oh, I lift up. Sorry.
Yeah, one line up. Shafkele Plesson Yar.
No. What? I don't have that. Shafke. So he let him be there. I don't know what you're reading there. So the Bosser Tlatin Yumi. So after 30 days, Ozol Vizchazile. And he told him, I want to see my place in Gan Eden. So he said, great. L'chayin. So Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa tried the old shtick, you know, give me your knife. I don't want to get nervous. So give me the knife. Oh, wait a minute, says the Malach HaMaves. You can fool some of the people some of the time. You know, if I fall for this again, then I'm the idiot. What? You want to deal with me the way your friend did? Whew, I'm still hurting from that. Omar Lay, so Chanina Bar Papa, says to the Malach HaMaves, okay, bring me a Sefer Torah and see if there's anything in that Sefer Torah that I wasn't Mekayim. All right? Why do you make such a fuss over it? Do you see that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was allowed into Gan Eden? So what do you care about? It's your darn business. If I want to jump into Gan Eden, it's up to you to make sure that I don't get into Gan Eden. What the heck is wrong with you? I thought we're supposed to be friends. If you can show me something in the Torah that I wasn't Mekayim, fine. I understand. You don't want me to get the Gan Eden. So, Omar Leis, the Malach HaMaves said to him, listen here. You are not like Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, and I'll prove it. Mi ichrachta b'bali ratan v'isakta b'teira. What, you would put a hand around a guy to learn daf yomi with him when he's got rasan, because the Torah, you have to show that the Torah is yalas chen. You never did any stuff like that. Yehoshua ben Levi, he was way beyond you. Now, so he wasn't allowed to jump in the Gan Eden. Nonetheless, let's not make a mistake. Rabbi Hanina bar Papa was head and shoulders above everybody else. And when he died, and Amuda Eish came and made a mechitza between him and everyone else, and they could not get near his body. He was completely surrounded by an Amuda Eish. The Gemiri de la Mifsik Amuda de Nura, El Alechad Bedora, Latrain Bedora. We have a Kabbalah that type of thing happens once in a generation, maximum twice in a generation, which means that his Madrega was an amazing Madrega, even though he wasn't the same as the Bali Rasa. Karav Lagabi Reb Alexandria, so Reb Alexandria came over to him as close as he could get. And he said to Reb Chanina bar Papa, Asebishvil Kvot Chachomim. I mean, you're putting down the whole world over here. You got to get rid of this thing because, I mean, basically you're saying no Chacham can get near you. It's very hurtful to the other Chachamim. Now people are going to look at them and saying, you know, you guys are worthless. The real people, you know, you can't even get near them. No, lo ashkach. There was no sign that he was going to let up for the covet of the other Chachamim. Get out of here, man. Keep your distance. So Rabbi Alexander said, do it for the covet of your own father. I mean, you're the one. I mean, we didn't see this by Rav Papa. No, lo ashkach. No difference. So then Rabbi Alexandria says, listen, we got to bury you, man. We can't even get near you to be able to, the Chevra Kadisha can't get near you. Well, you can't keep this up. So allow people to get near you for your own covet. So then the Amuda Esh disappeared to allow the Chevra Kadisha to get near. Omer Abaye, now this idea that there's an Amuda Esh, that is there to make the difference between the real tzaddik, in this case, Rav Chanina bar Papa, and other people who were not mekayim the Torah to such an extent that every single ois was mekuyim. Amalei Rav Ada bar Masni, you mean like you? Oh, gosh. That's a big slap in the face. So he says to Abaye, you mean people like you? It's meant to keep people like you away. Because, I mean, lafuke mimar, delo isle ma'aka la'igre. You don't have a ma'aka on your roof. I just walked by your house, and you're one to talk about other chachomim who aren't mekayim the Torah. Man, what hypocrisy. Velohi, it's not true. Of course, Abaye had a ma'aka on his roof. It happened to be that there was a storm that morning that knocked down his ma'aka. And then Rav Ada bar Masna had walked by and on the way to the Levaya over here, and he thought that he actually never had one, but mihavahave, ahishata hudashad yazika. Om Rabbi Chanina, how come we never see this disease in Bavel, huh? I'll tell you why. It's because they drink the right kind of beer. That's why. And that's always the best idea. I mean, for Chanina bar Papa could be sure of that for sure. That's Papa beer. First of all, they eat borscht. Now, borscht will save you from many things. And they have borscht over here in Bavel. And they drink the right kind of beer. Shotin Shecha Shalhizmi. They have beer that, even not the date beer, the hop beer, but these hops grow in thorn bushes. And that's the best kind. Om Rabbi Yochanan, and how come we never see tsaras in Bavel? That's because they have borscht and they drink beer, and because they go for a chitza in the Nahar Prat, and that saves them from Ra'atan, and brings us to this glorious moment of Hadra Alach Hamadir Etishto Sir Richard. Wonderful. And then Bezrat Hashem, if you come tomorrow on time, we'll be able to start the parak with words from Sir Richard.
You better get Doc to practice, because tomorrow's Torah reading and not much chance. I'm going to be right there. So I'll have to have my assistant take care of it for tomorrow. Anyway.
Okay, the Sagan. All right, then. Kol tov, everyone. Thank you so much. fascinating issues. If someone will explain why we have the Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's story as part of the description in reality, more than just that it happens to be, but the Vali Ras on continuation of the Mumin and the Mishnah, and how it's Nogea, the entire question that it would appear in Ksivis, then you get a prize. Okay. Kol Tov, look very much forward to being able to learn with you Bezrat Hashem tomorrow.